From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. As a special holiday gift to you, we will be talking with a former postal employee, Steve Grant, who about 6 months ago released his best-selling book, Mailman, My Wild Ride Delivering Mail in Appalachia and Finally Finding Home. The book recounts his personal experiences and reflections working for the Postal Service and about the remarkable people with whom he worked and to whom he delivered mail. The book earned rave reviews from the New York Times, Washington Post, Atlantic Magazine, Amazon, and others. In addition, Steve has been featured on numerous national televised broadcasts. Welcome to Naps Chat, Steve.
Robert, it's great to be here.
Steve, in its review of Mailman, the Southern Review of Books writes that you, quote, pull back the curtain on the Postal Service, revealing its foibles and idiosyncrasies alongside its stalwart heart built of devoted service and hard work, end quote. Was that your intention as you began writing your book?
It wasn't, and it was not my intention when I began my time as a letter carrier. I took the job because at the beginning of the pandemic, no one was hiring but the Postal Service. I needed health care. I remain grateful to the USPS and to the Rural Letter Carriers Union for my health care that my family and I enjoyed during my time as a carrier. As I wrote the book, I really just set out to tell the story of my year as a letter carrier. It turned into a love letter, I think. A love letter as I researched more about the Postal Service in writing the book, wanted to keep my facts straight. I realized, it's an incredible institution. It has incredible people working for it. And it wound up really being a love letter for all the things I got out of a letter carrier.
This was a love letter to the Postal Service?
I think so. It's an imperfect institution like anything else. Churchill famously said that democracy is the worst form of government just compared to all the alternatives. And the post office is like, it doesn't do everything perfectly, but it does something incredible every day, which is deliver mail to every address in the United States. And it has incredible people working for it. And I don't think I appreciated the difficulty of the job of being a letter carrier, the difficulty of all the many jobs inside any post office in the United States, and how seriously everybody took their work. And I wanted to be sure that the folks that maybe were less familiar with the Postal Service, when they read this book, that came across how earnest and sincerely their carrier took the sanctity and security of the mail and how they held it as their sacred charge, at the risk of being dramatic, to get their letters and their parcels to their home every day.
Steve, as you know, a lot of letter carriers, a lot of postal employees, as well as federal employees, probably purchased your book, as well as federal policymakers will be reading your book if they haven't done so already. What would this group of civil service gain from reading your book?
Well, for starters, as a guy that was in the private sector his whole career until I was a letter carrier, there was something special about it, something that was missing from my other work, which was when you're part of the government, particularly right down there at the front lines, and it was a national emergency, but I was doing a service to the American people. And, there's a lot of cynicism out there today, but I almost never got any of that from my customers. My customers were always glad to see me. And, it's a tough job when you're learning how to do it. If I made a mistake, they were forgiving because they love the U.S. Postal Service. And I want, if I was speaking to the executive management and at the USPS,
And I'm sure they're listening. I hope they're listening to this.
I hope they're listening too. I hope they know that high up in the organization, you're looking at org charts. You're running one of the largest logistical systems in the world. You're managing labor relations. You're dealing with having to do organizational change management. How are you deploying your capital? There's all those challenges. That's the management consultants in me talking. But your customer, this is a beloved service that they see as something that they both love, but they also see it as their right as an American. And I would always start by any decision you were making was, is this improving the service to the customer? And is this preserving this endowment that's in Article 1 of the Constitution for future generations of Americans? And I think if you use that as sort of your North Star in your decision making, you'll at least make clearer decisions.
Your book recounts your transition from being a high-end marketing consultant to a simple rural letter carrier, and finally back to consulting, and now you're on the speaking circuit, of course. How did being a postal employee change you as a person?
Well, it was a lesson in humility for a year, I'll tell you that much. Look, I'll be honest and say I had an arrogance coming into the job. I thought, you know, here I am. I have a master's degree. I've consulted with the Fortune 500. Surely it can't be that difficult to deliver the mail. And, and it's a common mistake that if you're good at one thing, you think that is going to transfer into another. And I was awful. I was as bad as any other starting carrier, I think. I was as overwhelmed as they were. A really wonderful man at the Rona PD&C, the recruiter, when he was onboarding me, he said to me, don't get your blinders on. You're going to get overwhelmed in those first few weeks. Don't get your blinders on. Just take your time and follow the mail. And I went back to his advice over and over again. In that year, you advance in your career and you forget what it's like to be the new guy. You forget what it's like to maybe not know everything you're supposed to do. And I really took that to heart once I left being a carrier behind, to go, all right, the people I'm talking to at the airport, supermarket, that they're in a frontline position. This might be their first day on the job, or they may be having a tough day. I've got to remember that they have to be treated with respect and patience, because they probably got as tough a job as I had when I was just a rookie carrier. And I think about that with my coworkers too now.
We have a new Postmaster General, David Steiner. So he's learning a lot about the Postal Service. He's, been
sure
in the logistics business, sort of waste management. He was on the board for the FedEx Corporation. What should he get out of this book, if he were to read it?
Again, in some ways I see he's got two sets of customers. He has the American people, of course, but then he has his frontline workers. Letter carriers are the soul of the post office. And, at one point in the book, I talk about how telling postal workers not to work, try to stay hydrated when it's 100 degrees outside is like telling a soldier in World War I to try not to get shelled, right? There's a disconnect, I think, with the way carriers are treated sometimes, that I would love to see them get more attention from management. I recognize that it's a collective bargaining role, that the union is involved there as well, that there are a lot of capital restrictions on how the Postal Service can do business. It isn't a normal business, right? It answers to Congress. But I would love for the postmaster to get creative about how to better support carriers on both the city craft and in the rural craft. How do you make their driving safer? How do you get them better gear for hot weather, cold weather, wet weather, better footwear? How do you give them enough time to eat a decent lunch? And this is all stuff that, with some flexibility, I think could be built in and could be worked out between the union and management. But, I think it's easy to get stuck up at 80,000 feet, and it's not like the the Postal Service doesn't have 80,000 foot challenges as well. But at the end of the day, it's those men and women that go out and carry a mail to the front door of the millions of addresses across this country that they've got to be taken care of. And I'd love to see him focus on that.
Let's move down from the 80,000 foot level down to, let's say, the 5,000 foot level, where a lot of our listeners are, and that's postal supervisors and postmasters and managers. What should they get out of this book? How? What was your relationship with them? How did you interact with the postmaster, the frontline supervisor, and folks like that?
I had, when I first started at the Blacksburg Postal, the MPO there in Blacksburg, I had a super postmaster. She was great. And she is the one who helped me navigate the maze of getting into an open position at Blacksburg versus Cave Spring up the road. And, it, you know, if she hadn't done that and I'd had to drive another 50 minutes each way every day to work, I don't know if I would have made it. But she really went out of her way to help me and was what an example of a great postmaster. She was helping her customers and she was helping her the other carriers in that office by getting a position filled. And she helped me. You know, I had some crummy postmasters, too, that, you know, we're not sort of employee support focused. And for the folks that are, if you're a good postmaster, you know it, you know who you are, you know, you back your carriers up, you know, you back your clerks up, you know, you're helping them get their job done and keep doing it because you're doing the Lord's work. I will tell you, I had some supervisors who were fantastic and these guys really looked after me and they made sure that, you know, when we were getting smashed by Amazon, they still looked out for me. They still make sure that I had time to grab a bite to eat, had time to cool off between doing parcel runs. And you know, those guys that are like frontline supervisors, they have a tough job. And there's animosity sometimes between, you know, carriers and management, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I actually felt pretty blessed to have a fairly harmonious management labor relationship in our office. I got sent to another office. I won't name names, but I got sent to another office. I got TDY'd there during peak season. And, oh boy, that guy was not a friendly dude. And it made it really tough. And so I think the guys that, and men and women that know that they're out there trying to get the mail delivered, but they're taking care of their carriers, I know they know who they are. And being treated with respect goes a really, really long way.
Now, let's talk about other folks you dealt with delivering the mail, and that are your customers. And you had some very interesting personalities that you talk about in your book. Can you share one or two of those memories that are most meaningful to you?
Sure. I'll give you a good one and a tough one. I had a couple of really great older folks that helped me out and that I helped out on my route. And there was a older woman who I carried chicken feed. She was in a very remote area and I carried chicken feed down to her chicken coops for her and gave me a bag of eggs to take home to my family. And I remember she said, "God bless you, young man." And I was like, you know, 50 at the time. And I thought like, well, I must be doing something okay if I'm still passing for a young man. But getting that kind of praise and generosity from a customer, you know, it really made you feel 10 feet tall. Another area, there's a little town outside of Blacksburg called McCoy. And you'll be unsurprised to hear that many people with the last name McCoy live in that town. And I couldn't find which McCoy I was supposed to deliver this parcel to. It was all dirt roads. And there was an old man tending his vegetable garden. And I said, "I think it's some kind of bodybuilding stuff." And he pointed me to the, "Oh, go past that big oak tree and then there'll be a blue trailer and that's where you're going." And, "Oh, wait." And then he ran off and he filled up a grocery bag full of tomatoes for me and gave them to me. He said, "Bring those to your family. Bring that home with you." it's just, you know, I was one of the things I was shocked by. Cynical, you know, marketing guy as I was going into this, was just like, man, people are really nice. People will help you if you ask for help. People will take your help if you offer it. overwhelming majority of people are really kind, generous people who are looking out for the folks around them. The one more story I'll tell you is I had a really difficult encounter with a customer who wanted to blame me for her parcel being late and also wanted to blame me for, I guess, the many problems of the world while she was at it. And it really bothered me. Most of the time, that stuff's like water off a duck's back. But on that given day, her hostility really got through to me. And I hope people, the folks who aren't in the Postal Service back home, but maybe for managers, I hope you understand how much, it's not every day, but sometimes a lot of hate gets thrown at your carrier. It's not that often, but it can be shocking when it does happen. And it's an additional burden that the carrier has to bear, because you know you're there representing not only the Postal Service but the U.S. government, and you have to meet people, you know, with kindness and with a cool character. But it still doesn't, you know, still hurts. Somebody calls you stupid or irresponsible, it still hurts. And that's something your carriers put up with, you know?
Let me ask you something else about your experience, and that was with postal vehicles, and particularly the notorious long life vehicle, LLV. Could you talk about it?
Yeah, the death trap. You know, on the one hand, I didn't drive the LLV very much. I drove an FF. That's a distinction that I guess with your audience I can get into. And there are a lot of things that were really great about it. I mean, the fact you had that big sliding door, you had the ready tray right there to your left that you could pass back through the bulkhead into the cargo area. It was very nimble. But, you know, you were also struck by the fact that it's like that thing was on the road when I was in high school, and I am not a young man. That it hasn't, and you know, you could say, well, what about the Metris or what about this? What about that? It's like if you drive to any post office around the country, for the most part, what you're going to see in the parking lot are LLVs and FFV. They don't have airbags. They don't have crumple zones. They don't have air conditioning. The heaters don't work sometimes. They don't have all-wheel drive. They don't have modern brakes. They don't have any sensors. They don't have any cameras. They don't have anything. They are an aluminum cracker box on a Chevy S10 chassis. And it's proof that the Postal Service can't deploy and raise capital the way that a company can. UPS is not driving the same trucks they drove 20 years ago. Amazon's out there with electric trucks, right? But the Postal Service is still driving the stuff that they had from 30 years ago. Now, I know the next generation vehicles are coming out. I hear they're great. But you're putting human beings, men and women, into what I consider to be unsafe vehicles, and you're doing it every day. And the fact that rural carriers drive civilian vehicles from the right-hand seat, reaching across the controls, I to this day don't understand how that's legal. And it's my one real ding against the post office is I just think road safety, for all the training, got excellent training, but at the end of the day, you're putting somebody in a vehicle that's not fit for service. And I'm glad to see that it's starting to change.
Yeah, Steve, for most people, they think you stick a stamp on the envelope, you put it in the mailbox, it somehow miraculously appears at the destination.
That's right.
You talk in an interview with CBS News host Major Garrett. He compared the process of delivering and processing mail to food preparation.
Yeah.
Isn't it important for Americans to understand how mail is actually processed?
I think it actually is very important. And I'll tell you, I hated casing the mail. And when my editor said, hey, I wish you would tell me more about, you know, in an earlier draft of the book, I wish you would tell me more about how you actually get ready to go out on the road every morning. And so I was like, okay. I wrote the chapter where I talk about casing the mail in the book. I have had so many people tell me that was one of my favorite chapters. I always wondered how that happened. There were a lot of people who were surprised that everything wasn't automated, right? My brother John even said, yeah, you pick up your truck in the morning and get out on the road. And I was just like, look, man, there's no picking up the truck. It's like you have to organize everything. I have described it as you put a library of random books in order every morning, and then over the course of your route, you take it apart again. It's one of the most arcane skills that a carrier does, and it's one of those things where any carrier who's had to sub for somebody else's route will tell you, casing the mail when you don't know the route is almost impossible.
The funny thing is my dad, who was a clerk years ago, would scheme. There was something called scheming, where that was before DPS, where you actually had to know the route order almost by heart and know where different addresses were. You didn't have this electronic with the scanning the mail, scanning the mail and having it pre-sorted for you. The carrier had to do it themselves, or the clerk had to do it for them.
And that's such a feat of memory, And I myself became surprised over time that, like, on the routes that I was familiar with, I would just put the parcels into the vehicle in route order, and I would remember, oh, right, 131 Smith has two parcels today. And that was because you just, in time, you internalize the route. And without that carrier knowledge, I don't think the Postal Service would work. It's that human element. I had a reader send a letter to Blacksburg, and it was addressed to Steve Grant, author of Mailman, Blacksburg, Virginia. That was the address.
It was funny.
There
was a former senator from, I believe, North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp, who had letters addressed. Heidi, North Dakota, USA. And it would get to her because the Postal Service knew that's where it had to go. And she always told that story. Let me ask you this. As you're touring the country now promoting your book, do you want to share any comments you've heard from those who've read your book?
Sure. I think you touched on one of your questions, which was like, I had no idea all the things that went into delivering the mail. I had no idea all the things that carriers have to do, that what an adventure it is for the mail to get delivered every day. And I've had so many people come up to me and say, my father was a letter carrier. My grandfather was a letter carrier. My aunt is a letter carrier. My uncle is a letter carrier. And in some ways, it's the family business of the country. It's one of those things, like, along with military service, that it is this thing that ties us all together, because so many people have worked for the Postal Service. And I encountered that as I delivered the mail around the country. I mean, around Blacksburg here, and, got coffee and was given snacks and, by customers, and people would share with me, who they knew in their life that had been a letter carrier. But to go around the country and have so many people talk to me about it, and to have them share their stories my postman would always say hello to me when I was a kid every day, and I looked forward to seeing him every day. And just what a part of the fabric of life they are here in this country. They're a tremendous treasure, kind of an invisible everyday treasure that I think we all have. And I hope folks appreciate that. I knew that when I wrote the book, but I've been surprised by it. That I've heard so much of it as I've gone around it.
Let me mention to you a phrase and let me get your reaction to it. Postal patriotism. Your reaction.
I'll give you two thoughts there. The first one was, it's not that I didn't consider myself an unpatriotic person, but being a letter carrier made me a more patriotic person. I was very proud to represent the United States Postal Service, to be part of this brotherhood that stretched all the way back to Ben Franklin and all the, hundreds of years between now and the founding of the country. And I would tell people that are thinking about the Postal Service that they could feel a sense of pride about our postal service. You know, I told you I lived in the UK. One of my closest friends lives there now and has told me just what a hash privatization has made of the Royal Mail. And I was talking to a guy who reviewed my book at the American Enterprise Institute, and I was surprised.
Kevin Kosar,
wonderful
good friend
guy.
Of mine.
Wonderful guy. And he had written a very glowing article in defense of the modernization and the role of that the Postal Service plays. And I've written him because he wrote me a very nice review. And I wrote him back and I said, listen, you know, you were at the American Enterprise Institute. I thought you would have been gung ho for privatization. You guys are so free market. And he said, there's nothing in the free market that could take on a country the size of the United States. He said the puny postal services of Europe will not scale to a nation the size of America. And I love that framing. But also, he's right. You know, I left my eyeglasses on a dive boat in Hawaii, in Kauai, and they sent it back to me by priority mail. And I thought, man, this, I had my glasses back within just a couple of days for just, you know, $15. And I probably should know what priority mail costs these days, but I don't anymore. But I mean, that's nothing from yeah. Hawaii, from, you know, from yeah. the middle of the Pacific Ocean all the way here to Virginia. And it was tracked every step of the way. And you know, protected by federal law enforcement from one end to the other. I mean, that's remarkable. And so to go back to the idea of having a patriotic feelings about our postal system, it is a miraculous economic multiplier, which has created tremendous wealth and opportunity and creative output and connection in the correspondence of the American people. In small businesses, in large enterprises. And it's been something that our founders in their foresight built for us. And every generation has reinvented it for a growing, evolving country. And I hope it will be there for my grandchildren in the future.
And I think your book will help preserve this wonderful institution. Steve, I want to thank you for joining me today. Thank you, Steve Grant, author of Mailman, My Wild Ride Delivering Mail in Appalachia and Finally Home. And thank him for joining us on Naps Chat. The book is published by Simon & Schuster and is available at your favorite bookstore as well as Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble online. It's a great read and will make a wonderful holiday present to either yourself or to others. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Bob, it was my pleasure.
And I want to thank Naps Chat listeners for logging on and wish everyone a great holiday season. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please share Naps Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe.